thing as being too Jewish.
Thank you very much.
Shalom and welcome to the Too Jewish Radio Show with Rabbi Sam Kohan and friends, a weekly serving of everything Jewish. We'll have a great hour together today of news, music, comedy, and conversation. Our guest this morning is Jeremy Cohen, the irrepressible creator of Hebrew Beer and Schmaltz Brewing Company, celebrating the 25th anniversary of his company. We'll also have a visit from our expert on the international Jewish scene, Tom Price. Please email your comments to us at TooJewishRadio18@gmail.com or visit us on the web at TooJewishRadio.com. The opinions of the host and guests on Too Jewish are their own and not those of the radio station. Too Jewish is paid for by Too Jewish Radio Programs and Podcasts, Tucson, Arizona. And now, here's Rabbi Sam Kohan and Too Jewish.
Shalom. It is my quite sincere conviction that Judaism, properly experienced, is an incredible way to enhance life, add deep meaning, spirituality, intellectual stimulation, ethics, and joy to each of our lives. It's always fascinating to me how many American Jews don't realize how great their own religious tradition is, and how much beauty and excellence it adds to what can otherwise be a rather pedestrian existence. Part of the pleasure of creating and recording a weekly radio show on Judaism here on Too Jewish is that I have the opportunity to explore pretty much anything and everything about our religion and culture every 7 days. And somehow, having done this for 19 years now, there's always something new and fascinating to discover. That's partly because we Jews have been around for 3,800 years or so, and have lived and had active Jewish communities in essentially every country on the planet at one time or another. That diversity is a wonderful strength expressed in Jewish prayer, thought, music, food, art, clothing, even in temperament. And I love exploring the incredible range of Jewish life across the world, including sharing stories about that international scope of communities each week with my good friend Tom Price. We must also note that the remarkable range of experience that the great storehouse of Jewish life makes available is balanced by powerful shared common elements of identity and character. For Jews, no matter how divergent our backgrounds, well, we share many values, a deep dedication to family, a reverence for the importance of education and learning, a profound connection to Eretz Yisrael, the land of Israel, a vital commitment to the greater notion of Klal Yisrael, the great shared peoplehood of all Jews everywhere. We are deeply committed to the greatest of Jewish ideals, the concept of justice, preserving it, seeking to see it in action in our world. We give tzedakah, the charity that goes towards righting the wrongs we see, and we work to help the downtrodden and needy in our civilization. We, nearly all of us, relate in very special ways to the wonderful, deep, and fabulous Jewish holidays, and almost all of us celebrate a Seder or light Hanukkah menorahs, or come to hear the shofar on Rosh Hashanah. Even when we celebrate the Sabbath to different degrees and in often quite different ways, we retain an understanding of the meaning, beauty, and purpose of this magnificent Jewish invention, the day of rest and sanctity, of family, food, and song. It's not so simple to explain exactly what Judaism is or why it unifies us through all of our amazing diversity. But it's a combination of these things, really, that connect us and help us fulfill that great Jewish goal of seeking to perfect the world under God's rule. And this is a world that clearly needs some fixing, no? It's perhaps not a surprise that I personally cannot truly imagine Jews choosing to live life outside the realm of this supremely accessible religious tradition, which inspires us to seek so many great ideals and does so by insisting we create practical means to make those ideals real in our own lives every day. Of course, I'm a rabbi and a cantor, and therefore somewhat biased towards appreciating the wonders of Judaism and living out those ideas and ideals in my own life, encouraging everyone to do so in his or her own life too. But in an America in which there are so many incredible ways to experience high-quality Jewish prayer, study, and social action, music, food, and humor, among many other possibilities, I would say it's incumbent upon every American Jew to take advantage of the amazing things that are offered. At my own synagogue, Congregation Beit Simcha, of course, but also throughout our community and in every active Jewish community, especially now that they're reopening again. So, in 2021, Judaism offers hope, energy, beauty, and meaning, as well as creativity, idealism, and joy. What more could you want? On the subject of the general joy of Judaism, the wonderful Festival of Lights, Hanukkah, is coming soon. To play us in this morning for the upcoming holiday, which begins 3 weeks from tonight for 8 crazy nights, here's a delightful Latin version of the Sephardic Hanukkah song, Ocho Candelicas, 8 Candles for Me, written by Flory Jagoda, sung by Dan Sachs, and accompanied by John Madoff and Marlon Sobel. Beautiful Hanukkah is here. 8 candles for me. 8 nights of pastries, 8 nights of parties, 8 nights of pleasure. Ocho candelicas.
Hanukkah linda está aquí. Ocho candelas para mí. Hanukkah linda está aquí. Ocho candelas para mí. Oh, una candelica, dos candelicas, tres candelicas, cuatro candelicas, cinco candelicas, seis candelicas, siete candelicas, ocho candelas para mí. Muchas fiestas voy a hacer. Con alegría y placer, muchas fiestas voy a hacer. Con alegría y placer, oh. Una candelica, dos candelicas, tres candelicas, cuatro candelicas, cinco candelicas, seis candelicas, siete candelicas, ocho candelas para mí. Ocho candelas para mí. Ocho candelas para mí. Ocho candelas para mí. Ocho candelas para mí.
That was Ocho Candelicas in a Latin-inspired version for Hanukkah, which starts at sundown November 28th for 8 nights. Join us for our fabulous Beit Simcha Celebrate 3 event on the 7th night of Hanukkah, coming up December 5th in person. Go to BeitSimchaTucson.org to sign up for Celebrate 3. When we return on To Jewish in a Moment, our guest, Jeremy Cowan, founder and president of Schmaltz Brewing Company and a longtime friend of both me and To Jewish, he's the creator of Hebrew Beer, will join us to celebrate the 25th anniversary of Schmaltz Brewing and explain about his many upcoming ventures. Meet Jeremy when we come back in a moment here on Too Jewish.
We are the soul of Tucson. We are your neighbors and friends. Our commitment to provide the very best relies on the finest products and services you, our community, has to offer. Together, we make Tucson thrive. When we win, you win. Casino del Sol, the soul of Tucson.
Enterprise of the Pasquayaki Tribe.
Congregation Beit Simcha, the House of Joy, a new Jewish synagogue in northwest Tucson in the Catalina foothill, celebrates a great array of services, classes, and events this fall and winter. Established by passionate, caring congregants and me, Rabbi Sam Kohan, Beit Simcha has already created a vibrant, vital community that strives every day to serve God with joy. Progressive congregation in northwest Tucson and the foothills, Beit Simcha is open to everyone throughout the metropolitan area, providing weekly Shabbat services, youth and adult education academy courses, social justice opportunities, outreach, and cultural Jewish programming. Join us for in-person Shabbat services or come on Facebook Live, going to our website, BeitSimchaTucson.org, BeitSimcha Tucson.org. We welcome both members and guests in our sanctuary safely and in person. Call 520-276-5675 for more information. Beit Simcha Synagogue is at 2270 West Ina Road on the north side of Ina, just west of La Cholla, near the entrance to the Foothills Mall property in our own building. Services, classes, and events are open to everyone. Join us in person Friday night and or Saturday morning. Email me, rabbi@beitsimchatucson.org, BeitSimchaTucson.org, or join us every Friday night, either in person or on our Facebook page. Shabbat evening celebration services are at 6:30 p.m. Saturday Shabbat morning services are at 10 a.m., all with me, Rabbi Sam Kohan, leading them. All of our Adult Education Academy classes are live and on Zoom. You can access those by going to our website, BeitSimchaTucson.org. Our wonderful religious school is available in blended format, too. Some students live, some on Zoom. And our fabulous Hanukkah extravaganza, Celebrate 3, is coming up Saturday night, December 4th at 6:30 p.m. For more information about Congregation Beit Simcha, to come to services, our great religious school and Torah Tikes program, bar and bat mitzvah, confirmation, and high school programs, and rich array of Adult Education Academy courses, all taught in person and on Zoom, and of course all of our services on Facebook, or of course in person, go to BeitSimchaTucson.org, BeitSimchaTucson.org, or call 520-276-5675, that's 276-5675, BeitSimchaTucson.org. Join me, Rabbi Sam Kohan, in the fastest growing and newest Jewish community and congregation in Southern Arizona in its exciting beginning years. We are delighted to welcome back to Two Jewish a good friend, Jeremy Cowan, who's the creator of Hebrew Beer, which celebrates its 25th anniversary. Is that right? Can that possibly be true? Oh my God, I'm getting older. Anyway, but also a little bit of a bittersweet aspect to it, and we'll talk about that with Jeremy. Good morning and welcome back to Two Jewish.
Thanks so much for having me. I think this is, what are we, number three, number four? I love it. I'm always happy to join you.
It's either the third or the fourth. That's just like the beer. You're never quite sure if it's your third or your fourth.
That's always a good sign, though. It means there was a good time had by all.
Indeed. Tell us about the 25th anniversary.
Yeah, so unbelievable. I feel like I'm a youthful 52 at this point, but evidently 25 years ago in San Francisco in 1996, I managed to put out 100 cases of Hebrew, the chosen beer, in our first creation, Genesis Ale. Friends and family, hand-squeezing pomegranates, helping label the beers by hand, and then I drove it around in my grandmother's Volvo and delivered beers to a few Whole Foods and some Molly Stones, and evidently it was business. Well, it was a start. It was an experiment.
When you began, I have to say, as good as the beer was, the shtick might have been better. The shtick has never stopped being great. Tell us a little bit about that.
Well, you know, when I first started, I had a friend, and I'm actually in San Francisco now for my 25th anniversary party we're going to be having at the Toronado in Lower Haight, one of the beer meccas of America, really, of the world, and happened to be in my right next to my neighborhood in San Francisco when I started and for many, many years thereafter. And I had a friend, and I'm going to see him. He told me very early on, just make sure you got three things straight. Pick whatever the three things are and then run with them. So at the time, I was trying to make really great beer, as you mentioned. So I picked quality. That seemed pretty obvious. And I definitely, from the very beginning, really only wanted to have, I used to joke, I wanted to start a Jewish nonprofit, which would be focused on art and literature and music and food and culture and humor. So, you know, it took a little while, but we got there eventually. So that was the community. And that was the second pillar of Schmaltz Brewing. But the third pillar obviously had to be shtick. And so I focused a lot. I tried to make the shtick as high quality and as community based as I possibly could. And those three pillars of Schmaltz Brewing have stayed to this day. They're on our T-shirt. They're on our 25th anniversary logo. They're on our brand new glasses and coasters. And it's been incredibly important to have all three elements of those throughout Schmaltz Brewing and Hebrew history.
You know, I have to say, I've never had a bad beer from Schmaltz Brewing, and they're all interesting. Although, I think I might enjoy the shtick even more. We will come back here on Too Jewish with Jeremy Cowan, the creator of Schmaltz Brewing Company and Hebrew Beer and all of its remarkable specialty brews. 25th anniversary of Schmaltz, but then a word about what's happening with Schmaltz as well when we come back in a moment on Too Jewish. Do you know someone who personally made a major difference for the whole Jewish people? An individual who's done important work for Klal Yisrael and deserves to be highly recognized for that effort. As president of the Kohan Memorial Foundation, I'm grateful that the modest cash awards we started more than 10 years ago have grown into a substantial amount of unrestricted funds given to winners, with the help of donors like many of you. The foundation, named for my grandparents, Rabbi Samuel S. Kohan and A. Irma Kohan, makes these awards for important service to Klal Yisrael, the entire Jewish people. That service can be in one of four activities: unity, education, creative arts, or rescue. Past Kohan Award recipients are remarkable people who've done outstanding work. If you know someone who qualifies for a Kohan Foundation Award, please go to kohanaward.com, kohanaward.com, and fill out the simple nomination form. That website is kohanaward.com. Nominate an individual or donate yourself. Do it for the whole Jewish people. If you have a question, comment, compliment, or criticism, kvetch or kvel, please email us at toojewishradio18@gmail.com. That's toojewishradio18@gmail.com, or visit our website, toojewishradio.com. You can hear all past and present shows through our website, toojewishradio.com, streaming us from there, or download us from the Apple iTunes Store as very popular Jewish podcasts, top 10 in America, according to Moment Magazine, over 100,000 downloads on Podbean.
Celebrate 3 is coming up fast. The best Hanukkah party in Southern Arizona features gourmet latkes, elegant appetizers, delicious drinks of all kinds, Hanukkah menorah lighting and songs, anniversary cake and desserts, dreidel gambling and games, elegant Hanukkah musical entertainment, a dedication, and much, much more. Join us Saturday night, December 4th, for a fabulous celebration of three things. The seventh night of the Festival of Lights, Congregation Beit Simcha's third anniversary celebration, the dedication of our new Bima, and food, fun, and frolic. Celebrate 3 is the best way to rejoice on Hanukkah this year. Go to BeitSimchaTucson.org to sign up for Celebrate 3 and make it a wonderful Hanukkah in person this year. That's Saturday night, December 4th at 6:30 p.m. at BeitSimchaTucson.org. Celebrate, consecrate, and dedicate. Food, drinks, candles, and fun at Celebrate 3.
We welcome our expert on the international Jewish scene, Tom Price. Good morning, Tom.
Good morning, Rabbi.
Tom, you have lived in France, spent a great deal of time there. It might be, I don't know if it's your favorite country. You have so many favorite countries, but the Jewish community there goes back very far, but it could be called a variety of Jewish communities, really, can't it?
Right. I think that's much more accurate. I mean, I don't want to be a nitpicker, but there are organizations that try to wrap the Jewish community of France into one. But because of French history, there is no single Jewish community in France. There are different communities in different cities and different regions. And I'll explain why I say that in just a second. First of all, let's talk about the age of the French Jewish community or communities. We know and have documentary and archaeological evidence that there were Jews in Roman France since at least the first century of the Common Era. Now, Rome conquered France in the Gallic Wars between the years 50 and 60 before the Common Era and divided it into multiple provinces. It was actually the first step that transformed Rome from being a vigorous young nation in the Mediterranean to on the way to being a world power and a great empire. They more than doubled their size and their territory when they won these Gallic Wars. But there were probably Jews in France since long before the Roman times, because cities like Marseille and Nice on the southern coast of France on the Mediterranean were settled by Greeks and built by Greeks. And pretty much every great Greek maritime center in the Mediterranean world had a Jewish community. So it's, although there's no proof, informed speculation would put a lot of money on the fact that there were Jews in these Greek cities before the Romans conquered what is today France. But indisputably and undeniably, in many of the big Roman cities, there were Jewish communities, and they have a different history from that of, let's say, the Jews of Alsace, who speak really a Germanic language, and the Jews of Brittany, who speak a Celtic language related to Welsh and Cornish. And the Jews of Provence have a very special history of their own. They have a whole literature and Jewish rituals in a Judeo-Provençal dialect that was their equivalent to Ladino. Most people today aren't really aware that there is a separate language called Provençal with its own literature and all that. And if you go to smaller towns in Provence, even today, street signs are bilingual and menus are bilingual, or sometimes only in Provençal, which puts even some French people at a loss. And most Americans who can barely suffer their way through a French menu, when they see a menu in Provençal, they just have to ask. So there are all these different languages, but also there are different outlook, a different sort of national characters. If you look in the southwest of France, there's actually two other national influences that reign supreme. One is the Basque influence in the Basque country, which crosses the Pyrenees in both France and Spain. And the other is the Spanish influence. The Bourbon dynasty of France, which produced kings for many centuries, was a Spanish dynasty after all. Then in the southeast, there's a huge Italian influence and an Italian mentality. And if you open a Nice phone book, two-thirds of the names are Italian, not because they're guest workers or recent immigrants, but because that part of France was always part of Italy. And the same with Alsace in the east, the area around Strasbourg,
right,
was
German,
back and forth between Germany and France for 1,000 years.
Right.
And it wasn't until the 1950s, when de Gaulle and Adenauer buried the hatchet, that there was real peace in Europe. And this was actually the beginning of what is today the European Union. So what I'm saying is different parts of France have different mentalities, different cultures, different languages, different histories. And therefore, the history of the Jewish community in these different places is quite distinct.
We will explore some of those, I guess, serially starting next week. Thanks so much, Tom.
I look forward to it.
It's time now for our old Jewish joke of the week, Jewish humor, Bubby and Zadie New, brought to you by Too Jewish as a public service. Abe isn't feeling well, so he goes to see Dr. Levy. Abe says, "Doctor, I have a sore throat." Dr. Levy says, "Okay, go in the next room and disrobe." Abe says, "But doc, look, I just have a sore throat." Dr. Levy says, "Yes, go into the next room and disrobe." Abe says, but Dr. Levy insists, "Go into the next room, disrobe." So Abe takes off his clothes, stark naked, goes back out into the ante room and sits down, waiting to be called. He sees a guy a few seats away, also completely nude, sitting with a small carton on his lap. Abe says to the guy, "Can you believe it? All I have is a sore throat, and the doctor makes me undress and wait out here." And the guy looks at him and says, "What are you kvetching about? I just came to deliver a package." That was the old Jewish joke of the week, special feature of Too Jewish, just for you. You should live and be well. And now a word of Torah. Jacob is the most interesting and confounding of all the patriarchs and matriarchs in the Bible. He is, in a literal sense, the true father of our people, since it is his 12 sons who are the ancestors of the 12 tribes of Israel. But what a complicated father of our people this man is. On the one hand, Jacob has many characteristics we should admire. He is intelligent, industrious, courageous, romantic, creative, clever, and prolifically productive. He repeatedly triumphs over better-equipped adversaries and eventually creates a huge family that evolves from a clan into a nation, our nation. Jacob lives an extraordinary and extraordinarily important life, and without him, monotheism would not have survived at all. On the other hand, Jacob is also tricky, manipulative, whiny, and as duplicitous as a modern-day politician. Throughout his life, he is far more concerned with results than morality. He is an awful sibling, a lousy son to his father, a mediocre husband, and a spectacularly bad parent. And he repeatedly ends up in weirdly terrible situations that he has either directly or indirectly caused. And while he benefits from others' forgiveness, he himself holds on to grudges until his very last breath. At the beginning of the Torah portion of Vayetse, our hero, Jacob, is in full flight from his furious brother Esau, rushed out of town by his mother Rebekah after conning his father and defrauding his brother of the family birthright. He lies down and puts his head on a rock and has that famous dream of angels going up and down a stairway to heaven. You can cue a little Led Zeppelin here if you want. And God is there at the top of the ladder. The Lord promises Jacob that he will become the father of a nation and that the very land he's lying on will belong to him and his descendants forever. Jacob awakens and says famously, "God was in this place and I didn't know it." Thus reassured, he heads out towards the old country, his grandfather Abraham's town of Haran, to seek his fortune. Arriving there, he immediately falls desperately in love with Rachel, so much so that he agrees to work for 7 years without pay in order to marry her. He's then tricked by an even more duplicitous dude, his father-in-law Laban. You thought your in-laws could be problematic, who pawns off his less attractive daughter Leah on the unsuspecting and possibly inebriated Jacob. Jacob is forced to agree to work another 7 years just to get the bride he originally wanted. It gets even messier from there. Children follow in rapid succession, as do two more wives. The domestic complications of his household, the tricks and tribulations of his willful wives and rambunctious boys multiply. After 14 years, Jacob's household has expanded exponentially, but his pockets remain empty. He then agrees to work for the same trickster Laban for another 6 years in order to build up a grub stake. Using advanced genetic manipulation techniques, he somehow contrives to create a huge dividend for himself. Think agricultural hedge fund, or perhaps playing the sheep and goat futures market brilliantly, or, I don't know, four-legged Bitcoin? Which leads to a quick escape for Jacob and his whole gang from the land of Laban. After a final conflict in which everybody present is manipulating everybody else, Jacob, Rachel, Leah, the secondary wives Bilhah and Zilpah, and 12 children, plus all those sheep, goats, and cows, head west towards Canaan. And this weekly installment of The Perils of Jacob concludes. Everybody in Vayetse is on the make, in one way or another. If the Torah is a spiritual and inspirational text, what are we supposed to think of a narrative replete with deception and manipulation? Interestingly, in spite of the very real, very human fallibility of our hero, despite the less than stellar conduct of all the men and women in this portion, by the conclusion of Vayetse, everything seems to have worked out. Jacob's descendants are positioned to grow into the nation God predicted, and everyone is now headed back to the land God promised. In essence, God has had an eye on the end result, even when the supremely fallible human beings didn't. The abiding message may simply be that we may not always act well or demonstrate sound judgment, but God has an eye on the long-term good, and God somehow will bring us all home. When we come back, our guest, the delightful Jeremy Cowan, founder of Schmaltz Brewing Company and Hebrew Beer, joins us for the 25th anniversary of his company and lets us know just what's coming up next. all that when we return on Too Jewish in just a moment.
We continue with our Too Jewish update on news of Jews around the world with commentary.
After Senator Josh Hawley briefly held up the appointment, the U.S. Senate confirmed Tom Nides, businessman and former Deputy Secretary of State, to be the U.S. Ambassador to Israel last week. It's never been clear what objection Hawley, Republican of Missouri, had to Nides, but he said that he represented other Republicans in advancing the hold on Nides and seven other ambassadorial nominees last week. Anyway, that's done. The Biden administration pressed for the Nides confirmation, noting a number of sensitive issues are in play in the Middle East, as always, including the resumption of talks for the U.S. to re-enter the Iran nuclear deal, efforts by the U.S. and Israel to expand the Abraham Accords, normalizing relations with Arab countries, and U.S. objections to Israeli settlement expansion. Nides, a banker, was Deputy Secretary of State for Management and Resources from 2011 to 2013. He has always had good relations with Israeli diplomats. Nides was involved in the Obama administration's loan extension to Israel that was worth billions of dollars. Nides also notably ran former Senator Joe Lieberman's vice presidential campaign back in 2000. Facebook, or Meta, or whatever it's called now, is not the only tech giant experiencing special scrutiny these days. A new Twitter hire responsible for curating news coverage on Twitter of the Middle East and North Africa has apologized for tweets harshly critical of Israel made in 2010 and 2011 after they generated controversy on social media last week. Fadah Jassim, former journalist who lives in London, also apologized for not including Israel's flag alongside those of 17 other Middle Eastern and North African countries, including the Palestinian flag, by the way, but not Israel, in a tweet that announced her appointment as editorial curation lead for the MENA program. The omission of the Israeli flag first earned Jassim scrutiny from pro-Israel groups early last week. The watchdog group Stop Anti-Semitism tweeted, "Hey, at Fadah Jassim, you seem to have forgot something." The group Israel War Room asked Twitter for a response, saying the omission reflected either woeful ignorance of the territory at Fadah Jassim is supposed to cover, or anti-Semitic erasure of the only Jewish state. Hours later, Nasher Jew, a UK investigative outfit instrumental in exposing anti-Semitism within the Labour Party, which ultimately led to the party's split, unearthed and reposted 10-year-old tweets. One from September 2010 says Israel was not born but dropped like a bomb in the middle of Palestine. Another shows support for Nation of Islam leader Louis Farrakhan, who has a terrible record of virulent anti-Semitism, quotes Farrakhan taking issue with U.S. support for Israel. Jassim's posts come amid ongoing questions about objectivity in social media news coverage, a major source of news in the U.S. and around the globe. According to a recent Pew survey, about half of Americans get some of their news from social media. While Twitter's editorial curation teams do not produce original reporting, they are responsible for creating Twitter quote-unquote moments or aggregations of news stories from a particular region or event. Curation teams find and highlight great tweets, according to Twitter. Jassim came to the role from a 5-year stint at a tech company. She previously worked as a producer and editor for several television networks. Jassim initially responded to some of the online criticism, answering a question on Twitter from Emmanuel Miller of Honest Reporting, another group devoted to calling out what it identifies as anti-Israel bias in media. She apologized. "I can see that I have been ill-informed with some tweets when younger," she wrote. "I apologize for any offense caused by these particular tweets and for forgetting the Israeli flag with reference to MENA, as I did some others." In another recent tech world controversy, Google reassigned its head of diversity, Kamau Bob, earlier this year after blog posts from 2007 were unearthed in which he claimed in a post about the Israeli-Palestinian conflict that Jews have an insatiable appetite for war and an insensitivity to suffering. Yeesh. And finally, Jewish ace pitcher Max Fried delivered the Atlanta Braves their first world championship since 1995 with 6 shutout innings in Game 6 of a World Series, heralded as the most Jewish in all of baseball history. 27-year-old lefty Max Fried held the Houston Astros to 4 hits, overcoming a potentially serious ankle injury in the first inning to go on to strike out 6 and not surrender a run or a walk. The game contained what might have been the most Jewish play in any Major League Baseball matchup yet. In the bottom of the second inning, Astros star third baseman Alex Bregman came to the plate and sliced Fried's second pitch to right field, where Braves outfielder Jock Peterson caught it for the second out. To most fans, it was a mundane flyout with no significance, but to Jewish fans, it showcased three Jewish players performing on the sport's biggest stage. For Jock Peterson, who entered the series on a red-hot tear immortalized by his nickname Jocktober, the victory gave him a second consecutive world championship. Peterson played for the 2020 world champion Los Angeles Dodgers. He celebrated his achievement with a cigar and his trademark old Jewish mother pearl necklace. The fourth Jewish player to appear in the World Series, Astros backup catcher Garrett Stubbs, came into the game as defensive replacement in the ninth inning. He didn't hit, but still, four Jews in the World Series, almost half a million. Mazel tov to Max Fried and Jock Peterson on becoming world champions. And that's the Two Jewish News of Jews around the world. We welcome back to Two Jewish, a good friend of Two Jewish, and a great brewer, Jeremy Cowan, the founder of Schmaltz Brewing Company, the creator of Hebrew Beer. You know, you talked on the 25th anniversary, which, by the way, it's a good reason to open one of them. You talked how Genesis Ale was your first one. Tell me about what were your favorite beers, your specialty beers that you came up with?
Oh, man, but that's when you ask a brewer what their favorite beer is, it's definitely like asking parents what their favorite kid is. And, you know, we definitely maybe want to say every single beer we made was very special. And I do feel that way. All of the beers from Schmaltz had a unique reason for existing. I really tried to tie in the story to the hops and malts, to the marketing. And whether that was Messiah or Nut Brown Ale, we went straight. I don't know why I went straight from the beginning to the end, but I started with Genesis. The second beer I put out was called Messiah. And then over the next, well, I don't know, 23 and a half years, I had to fill in between those two. So we had a beer called Origin, which is our pomegranate strong ale, which I absolutely adored. It was an 8% amber ale that we put out for my 10th anniversary. The series called Jubilation was incredibly important to our company. Started with 8 malts, 8 hops, 8% alcohol for our 8th anniversary. And then it went all the way up to 22. We got to 17 malts, 17 hops, and 17%, which was pretty awesome. And then we flipped and Jubilation 22 at 11 malts, 11 hops, 11% in a 16-ounce can, and the label had a picture of a 22-ounce bottle, which was very important to us over the years, but it was on a 16-ounce can, and it said, this is not a 22-ounce bottle, so very happy with the shtick on that bad boy. You know, some of the other beers that I really loved were the reunion series I did with my friends at Terrapin Brewing and eventually at Renegade and Eighth Wonder. We had an amazing project called Shebrew, which was long, long overdue. Probably should have been one of the first beers we made, but we started doing it about 7 years ago, and it's a collaboration for International Women's Collaboration Brew Day. The most recent Shebrew was a tribute to Ruth Bader Ginsburg that we did with Mustache Brewing, some friends of mine from Long Island. And we've had a ton of making beers that won, thankfully, and really, really lucky, won just about every award there is to win, from the Great American Beer Festival to the World Beer Cup to U.S. Beer Tasting Championships. We were rated over the years in the top 100 breweries on Rate Beer several times. So I really am proud of the flavors that we created and of course, the shtick. But I think once I really turned it from a Jewish nonprofit into a really amazing brewery with you know, kind of Jewish content and Jewish clothing and Jewish sensibility and history and music and art, literature and food, then all of a sudden it turned into a really fantastic brewery.
So you moved originally. You were originally in San Francisco, as you said. You moved to New York. Tell us about that.
So I started in San Francisco in the Mission District. We squeezed those original pomegranates into buckets on the floor of my apartment in San Francisco in the Mission. And I brewed with a little tiny brewery in Cupertino in the very beginning. And then we moved to Anderson Valley Brewing Company up in Boonville, a really, really incredible small craft brewery at the time, now not so small and still really incredible. And then in 2003, I moved actually to the East Coast, and I gave up my place in San Francisco, went and slept on my friend's on his couch in Brooklyn, moved the production to upstate New York. So since 2003, we've been brewing in New York. For many years, I kind of said I was still based in San Francisco, but brewed in New York. But the reality was I had a P.O. box in Coal Valley for 10 or 12 years. And I would drive around the country selling beer door to door, to door to door to door to door to bar to bar to bar over and over again for about a decade. So that was a really incredible way to see the United States and meet friends all over the country and work with Jewish community groups, but work with some of the best brewers in the country on collaborations and on parties and events and sell a lot of beer and hire a staff and grow the business up to about, we had between 20 and 30 staff at any given time. And we're selling about $5 million worth of beer. So it's really proud of being able to get to that level. And then we built a brewery in upstate New York and did that for 6 years, which was another complete chapter and an adventure. So I sold that brewery a couple years ago to some friends from New York, and now we're back to contract brewing in Westchester. We have a tasting room in Troy, New York, and a little tiny beer brand in New York City called Alphabet City Brewing Company, which we're going to start focusing on here shortly.
Why did you decide to sell the brewery?
So, you know, I'm a sales and marketing guy, and I love branding, and I love flavors, and I love working with production people, but... we built this brewery because at the time there was very little excess capacity in the country in 2010, 11, 12. We had a really complex beer portfolio with about 20 or 30 beers a year and five different yeast strains and 400 barrels in our sour barrel aging program. So we built this brewery with the idea that at least we control our own destiny. But you know, in 2013, 14, and 15, the craft beer world changed a lot. And it went from 2,000 breweries when we opened to 10,000 breweries. Literally in 4.5 years by the time I sold the brewery. And our portfolio had changed. I had sold one of the brands. Coney Island was a brand that started in New York City in Brooklyn, 2006, 2007, 2008. I sold that to Sam Adams, and that helped fund the production of the build-out of the production brewery. And then we ended up brewing for tons of people. I started bringing on contracts. So not only had I been a contract brewer for years, but then I started brewing for other people. And I was able to grow that facility from about 5,000 barrels the first year to about 30,000 barrels after 5 years. So it was a good opportunity to get out of the factory running business and get rid of overhead. And it turned out to be incredibly lucky timing because about 6 or 8 months later, a little something came to town called the COVID global pandemic.
Yeah, that could not have helped sales.
No. And, you know, when at the brewery in Clifton Park, I had about 20 people on staff. The rent was $27,000 a month, or, you know, our mortgage payments, our overhead, our payroll. It was enormous. And luckily, before COVID, I was just completely lucky. I was able to make that transition back to brew beer that we need to brew when we want, have a small, tight staff, focus on sales and marketing, and not have to run a production factory every single day. It was just almost impossible to get any kind of brand focus or sales and marketing efforts while I was running a factory every day. So it worked out pretty well. And, you know, lots of new chapters, including one I assume we're about to talk about.
Well, let's talk about that. That's exactly what I wanted to go into. But I want to save some time for some of your favorite shticks, because really we have to hear about those too. Tell me about the new chapters.
So for our 25th anniversary this year, we have two fantastic new beers, a reissue. It's been a few years since we made Bittersweet Lenny's R.I.P.A. It's a rye-based double IPA, and it's a tribute to Lenny Bruce, a hero of mine, a fallen icon, Jewish comedian from the
50s. Great comedian. And by the way, if you've seen the marvelous Mrs. Maisel, there's a guy who plays Lenny Bruce quite well. I think he's been reintroduced to a lot of audiences that way too.
Absolutely. And we brewed that beer for our 10th anniversary, and it got such great ratings and won a ton of awards, and we aged it in rye whiskey barrels. And so this is the first year we're releasing it in 16-ounce cans, and it is literally just hitting wholesalers in the next 2 weeks, and it'll be around the country in places like Total Wine and Whole Foods. And beverages and more in a handful of other spots. So keep an eye out for that.
Gotta look for that. It's wry because Lenny's humor was so wry, I would assume.
It was a combination of the RIP and the IPA and the rye, which gives it a really beautiful spice, but a little bit more aggressive and a little less elegant than some other alternatives. And I really liked that. We called it brewed with an obscene amount of malts and hops. And at the time, it was 10 malts, 10 hops, and 10% alcohol, which was very rare in the United States. So that beer is coming out right now. The other beer we're putting out is really the totem beer of the moment and our big theme for our 25th anniversary, which also is happening right now. It's called Exodus 2021, A Farewell to Schmaltz. So we are simultaneously celebrating 25 years.
You started with Genesis and it ends with Exodus.
Exactly. I mean, I had Messiah right there in the beginning.
Yeah. Well, that's complex. It was a complex beer, right?
It is. And, you know, having Exodus is funny because in this context, it's fantastic. I'm going to wrap up the production. We did our last packaging of Schmaltz Brewing beers about a week ago, and we're going to be releasing Exodus into the world here shortly. It's a barley wine, a very strong 8.8% barley wine brewed in honor of our 25th anniversary and leading up to Hanukkah this year.
The perfect beer with brisket and latkes, we have to say.
Such a great pairing beer. It's brewed, as was the original inspiration, with the sacred species that are listed.
The Shivat Haminim, the seven species of Israel. Right, of course.
Yeah, exactly. So the first two are barley
and wheat. Yep.
So obviously very important for the brewing of high-end craft beer. And then we have pomegranates, figs, dates, and grapes in this brew. And I am just thrilled with how it turned out. And the shtick is good. I mean, Exodus 2021, what a year, right? About everything, plagues and darkness. And
maybe not frogs, but everything else.
Yeah, we had cicadas and crickets. So that was...
Yeah, that's right. Close, very close.
So hopefully, you know, the point of Exodus 2021 is not to just put a nail in the end of it and call that the end of the story, but really is to celebrate what we've been able to accomplish as a company, as a community, over 25 years, and to think that maybe there is something on the other end. I mean, I don't know if this is the very end of Hebrew beer and Schmaltz brewing, and I don't know if it's the last Jewish-themed beer that'll be made in the United States. Who knows? But the promised land offers opportunities for new interpretations and new chapters and new adventures. And that's mostly what I'm excited to explore. I'm not going out of business. The company is not going out of business. We're not closing our business. We're just wrapping up the Schmaltz brand, which, you know, at this point, it's been in the White House for Jewish Heritage Nights. There's a bottle in the Jewish Museum in San Francisco in their permanent collection. I was lucky enough to be able to give talks at some of the biggest Jewish book festivals in the country. I've done things at the Jewish museums on both coasts. I really feel proud of what was accomplished with Hebrew and Schmaltz, far, far beyond anything I imagined in the very beginning, just putting together a few bottles of a 22-ounce with capping the bottle by hand and putting the labels on the little gluer and putting it on by hand and having no idea where this experiment was going to lead.
It's a great story. What's your favorite shtick?
Well, you know, it's funny. I've been reading the beer labels lately, and we're going to start putting on our website, on social media, we're going to start putting all these beer labels
back up. Oh, yeah, you got to put them back up.
A lot of research. I had a lot of wonderful coworkers and interns and people that then gave me the fodder to pull together for beer labels and stories over the years. And the new Exodus, I honestly am really excited about because it kind of came together over the last 3 to 6 months as I was figuring out what is it? I mean, what is Exodus? What is Farewell? What is the 25th anniversary? So I hope people will get a kick out of that. It's everything from Torah to Tolstoy to Bart and Lisa and The Simpsons. I'm really happy with the new Exodus 2021. And the other night at our open mic, for the first time, I threw in a little interpretive reading of the Bittersweet Lenny's RIPA label, which I haven't done in a while. And it's really fun. I mean, if anybody knows Lenny Bruce, there's a lot of inside jokes in that, and a lot of meaningful moments, I think, that are really true.
I think you left out the part about a chicken fe, but which is my all-time favorite Lenny Bruce routine. But Jeremy, it's great to talk to you. Tell us where people can find out about your new project, about Exus 2021.
You. So website is always the best spot to start with, schmaltzbrewing.com, and make sure you spell it S-H-M-A-L-T-Z, which I will stand by till the end. That was
No C. I'm sorry.
When I started, Leo Rosten had written The Joys of Yiddish, and my grandmother gave it to me when I started, and Schmaltz was S-H-M-A-L-T-Z, also could be S-C-H.
But it's
now,
not.
Unbelievably enough, which we tried to do a campaign that, of course, didn't work, to get Google, New York Times, and Apple to stop auto-correcting to SCH. So all the people out there who sent us emails over the years and tried to get to our website and couldn't find it because it was SH, thank you for finding us and finding our beers. Same thing on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter, all the information about our 25th anniversary farewell tour, which is also called the Class of 96, which we've done in Denver and Troy and now San Francisco. Now in San Francisco, we'll have more in New York City, Tampa, Philly coming up. And then it's also called the Let My People Brew Tour.
Also good. Very good. Let My People Brew. Gotta like that.
Beer.
Yep.
So I've got, Mark Edelson from Iron Hill, and I think Keith Glossberg is going to swing by, and Alan Newman is here in spirit, and
in
Mark
spirits.
Cohen from Fiddlehead I got a chance to have a few beers with, so that was really awesome. And Matt Cohen's just amazing and really an inspiration, so loved having a beer with him. And then, the last one is it's called the No Schmucks Tour, because 25 years, I've been incredibly lucky. I've had so many people help me out, and I really have a good time being able to hang out with them, network with them, and say thank you to them by having beers and even a new liquor project called Schmaltz Liquor, and ways to celebrate what we've all accomplished, turning craft beer into the real part of American fabric in the economy, in popular culture, and in the culinary world. It's really incredible what the craft brewers have accomplished over the last 20, 25, 30, and 40 years.
Jeremy, thank you so much. And I have to get some of that barley wine for our Hanukkah celebration, I think. We'll have
Absolutely.
To figure it. Have to get it to Arizona. Thank you so much. Mazel tov on 25 years, and may the future only bring more bright stars.
Thanks so much, Sam. Been wonderful to connect with you. I love it every year, and let's see what the new chapters will be after the new year and beyond. So I look forward to being in touch with all of your listeners and your wonderful community, and many more adventures to come.
Thank
L'chaim,
you.
L'chaim, everybody.
L'chaim. When we come back on Too Jewish, we'll hear about next week's guest get a final musical play out.
We are the soul of Tucson. We are your neighbors and friends. Our commitment to provide the very best relies on the finest products and services you, our community, has to offer. Together, we make Tucson thrive. When we win, you win. Casino del Sol, the soul of Tucson.
Enterprise of the Pasquayaki Tribe.
Thanks for being here with us this morning on Too Jewish with me, Rabbi Sam Cohan. Join us next week. Our guest will be Greg Schneider, president and CEO of the Claims Conference, on their new report on anti-Semitism in Britain, which has shocking findings to report. And don't forget, join us at Congregation Beit Simcha in person every Friday night for services and Oneg Shabbat, all starting at 6:30 p.m., and Saturday morning at 9 a.m. for Torah study, 10 a.m. for services, Torah reading and Kiddush. And definitely don't forget our third anniversary Celebrate 3 event coming up on Saturday night, December 4th. Our playout this morning comes from the Jewish a cappella group 613 and their Ariana Grande-themed Hanukkah offering last year's. For Hanukkah coming up 3 weeks from tonight, sign up again for Celebrate 3. Food, drink, music, lights, latkes, menorahs, dreidels, silent auction, prizes, games, and much more. Go to BeitSimchaTucson.org, B-E-I-T-S-I-M-C-H-A, Tucson.org, to sign up for Celebrate 3. My friends, may you have a healthy week. God willing, a Shavua Tov, a good week, and a week, we pray, of peace.
Sponsored by two Jewish radio programs, Tucson, Arizona.